Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's a great pleasure to welcome today's program, Brian Reed, who's VP of Business Development at Geodis. And today, we're going to talk about the digitization of freight. Now, this is a topic that has generated a lot of buzz and discussion over the past couple of years, but also has raised a lot of confusion and questions. What exactly is the digitization of freight? Is this going to be a disruptive force in the industry or a transformational one in the industry? And what action should companies take, to prepare for the digitization of freight? Well, those are just some of the questions we're going to discuss in today's episode. It's great to have Brian with us today to kind of share his insights and advice on this topic. So, Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Adrian. I appreciate you having me here today and looking forward to the conversation. I think it's a great timely topic, and hopefully you can provide a few answers for people out there in the audience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you're a first time guest here on Talking Logistics. I mean, we've had, some of your colleagues there at Geodis on the program before, but, before we dive into the topic, I always like to ask whenever I bring a new guest on, how did you get involved with this industry to begin with? So why don't you kind of briefly tell us a little bit about your career path, how and why you got involved with supply chain and logistics and kind of what your current role and responsibilities are there at Geodis?
Sure. Appreciate it. Thanks. I'll give a little bit of a detail. So you could say it's in my genes, although ironically, when I studied in college, I studied genes. So my degrees come from an odd background in chemistry and genetics, but my father was in supply chain for many years when I was a kid. And so I guess it was always in my blood and always there to come out. I've been pretty lucky in my career. I've been able to see a little bit of all the supply chain areas. It's kind of unique in the areas that I've been able to cover. So I started in the software space. So designing solutions, designing applications and software for supply chain. Whether that's visibility systems, transportation management systems, those kind of applications. That obviously migrated more into implementation, so taking those solutions to customers and helping them implement those, drive value through the applications. And of course, that evolved into more business consulting when I was doing that for a while. That's both business and IT and kind of tying two together. And luckily, I haven't forgotten the IT side of the world, so I get to play the referee sometimes, or the translator, as they call me occasionally. From there, I actually took a little bit of a break. I decided to get off the road for a few years, spent some time at a large shipper. So I managed a P&L in freight about $400 million here in the United States, which was great because you get to see if all those theories were actually real. And some of them are and some of them aren't. So that was a great experience to bring that together. And so now I've kind of come full circle. And, having been a part of consulting, having been part of applications, having been part of it being a shipper, now I'm on the carrier side with Geodis, which is a great experience because I think it gives me that experience I had before was able to bring to the customers we have today. I focus on supply chain solutions, so 4PLs and beyond. 4PL is a bit of a dicey word, as you might have heard Matt Lewis say before. Some people have different definitions of it. To me, it's more about supply chain outsourcing, whether that's just outsourcing your transportation or it's outsourcing your entire supply chain. Those are the kind of things we're focused on.
Great. No, very, very diverse, background there and areas of experience. So it's always great to have someone that kind of brings a, different experience, from different sides of the table, if you will. And I think you're the first guest that has a genetics, background. So we've got engineers. I'm an engineer myself by background, and we've had others that come out of the, the marketing or the business side. But I think you're the first that has, genetics.
It's unique and fairly unuseful at this point. But you learn, and just as you do in engineering, you learn processes, you learn steps, you learn way to analyze problems and look for good solutions. So it all works in the end.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot going on in that field as well. There is. You read about. So, I'm sure there's, like you said, a lot of things that apply. Just the fundamentals apply to supply chain because it is a complex system, just like the human body is a complex system. So. So let's go right into the topic now. I mean, I like I said in my opening comments, I think if you ask 10 people, what does the digitization of freight mean, you probably get, 10 different, responses. I mean, so how do you define the digitization of freight?
That's a really good question. And I think I've been lucky over the past couple of years to spend a lot of time in the digital space working with startups. And also when I was a shipper, we were very technology forward and always looking for that next exciting thing to go in there. I think, digitization of freight is fairly simple in my mind. It's really taking manual or human-based processes and digitizing those, making those electronic. Now, some people go a little bit more specific and they say web-enabled. I like to leave a little more broad because there's certain technologies out there that aren't necessarily web-based, right? Autonomous driving and et cetera. So there's different technologies that fit into that. And to give your attendees just an idea of what that means in maybe a more layman's sense, is look at the audio, music, and video for movie industries. They've really had a huge digitization of their supply chain. In that case, they've really done the whole thing. They got rid of the product, right? They make the movies in digital, they make the videos in digital, they make the audio and the music in digital, and then that's transmitted now digitally to us, either directly to our homes or even in some cases to movie theaters. So that's one that's easy to put your mind around and understand, what can it mean? Now, obviously, on the freight side, we're not quite to the point where we can, teleport things digitally across the world. So we still have that physical part in the middle. But what kind of automated processes or automated systems or digital systems can we insert on the front and the middle and the end to kind of remove that manual or that labor intensive or that human interactive element, get it off of paper, get it off of phone calls, get it off of voice and et cetera, and move that to the digital world.
Yeah, no, that last part you brought up, I mean, that's how I tend to define it as well. Because I think, one of the things I see is that, we, and us analysts and consultants are kind of guilty of this. We tend to use this big word, digitization of freight and terminology. And sometimes these definitions get to be, very generic or high level. And a lot of times when I talk to supply chain and logistics professionals, they need something that they can grant that's more grounded, right? Something that's a more practical definition, so that they can at least know where should they get started. And I think that last point is a key piece. I mean, I think you can say, look, if you look around the processes, whether they're internal or between trading partners, and if you're handling a lot of paper right now, or if you're taking information from a piece of paper and you're typing it in, and then somebody else is taking that information and typing it into a different program, that's where a lot of this opportunity lies in terms of saying, hey, is there a better way? Is there a way that we can, convert, move away from these paper-based processes, these manual, ways of doing things that can help streamline and facilitate the flow of information between the different folks. That's the way I kind of tend to, position it, to folks. So I think, I said the most basic thing is look around. If you see a ton of paper, a lot of people typing information, that's where the opportunities lies for this, right?
Yeah, and I would even say there's different levels too, right? So you could argue, and I know you've been in the space for quite a while, such as I have, and I think there's different levels of this digitization. You could argue we began it years ago with the transportation management systems, the warehouse systems. Those are digitization of taking paper processes and putting them in the system. But I think there's also evolutions of those, not necessarily those specific ones, but as technologies move on, there's the new way of doing it. So you're talking about RPA with robotic process automation, machine learning, natural language processing. Those are technologies that are new and, pretty exciting, and in some cases can maybe accelerate your digitization. Some people will go straight from the paper to that, which is great. But there's a lot of people that say, well, I've already got a TMS, I've already got a WMS, I already have an ERP, enterprise systems. I'm already digitized. Well, you are, but there's kind of different levels. There's the basic, the expert, and then the guru, right? And so I think that, these technologies, and we're in a great time. I think that, this is a good time when a lot of technologies are coming up. And now it's our job to go out there and see what they are and figure out, are they useful for me? Or to your point, are these just buzzwords that consultants and analysts are throwing around for us?
Right. That's a great point in terms of there being kind of an evolution here or a journey, component to this. You brought up some of these emerging technologies, and one of the ones that kind of generates a lot of questions today and discussion today is blockchain. Mm-hmm. Certainly we've done a number of episodes here and written a lot of blog posts about it. I mean, is there a link between the digitization of freight and blockchain?
Yeah, I mean, there is. To me, blockchain is just another tool in the toolbox, right? As are all of these. So these are digital tools that you can apply to problems that you might have. And obviously in the freight industry is what we're more concerned about. And some of them can also be applied to other industries. So there is a link. I don't think it's a mandatory link. In other words, you can use this tool set or you cannot use this tool set. And I think the one thing with blockchain that we've kind of noticed over the past, say, year to 18 months, is it's generated the hype, right? And I wrote a post about it a few months ago that I believed it was over the hype cycle, and it turned out to be true. So every once in a while I get lucky and I get one right. And so, the hype is done, but that doesn't mean the value is gone, right? So I just felt at that time the hype was so high that people's expectation on the value was also that high. And the value's there, but no one had really proven it yet. I'm a believer of blockchain. Don't get me wrong. I think it's got a lot of value. I just feel sometimes it's a solution looking for a question, when in reality, it should be an answer to a question. So to your point, you know, when you're sitting there looking around your space, whether you're already digitized and you're doing something in a digital format, or whether you're still using paper, you just say, okay, can blockchain in freight make sense based on the technology it provides? But you should also be asking, can something else make sense? Right. So blockchain is, and I would argue maybe with most of these, I mean, maybe with autonomous driving, it's pretty self-evident. It either works or it doesn't. And I think that's one that's going to be here sooner or later. But things with blockchain, RPA, machine learning, those kind of things, you know, don't force that technology into digitizing your supply chain if it doesn't make sense, or if there's a better solution. That maybe digital, maybe not. You know, that's the other thing. I think everyone thinks that digital is the way to go and it's the only way to go. I disagree. I think you use it for your business when it makes sense. It's kind of back when I was doing a lot of work in TMS space. Not every TMS fits every single customer. So not everybody should go full digital. You know, there's some cases where the manual process might be just fine. And especially if you're outsourcing it to the Philippines or India, your cost structure may not be that much different than something you're going to get with the technology. That said, I think it's the time now to investigate, talk to advisors such as yourself, understand the space, educate yourself, and try things. So I think that's blockchain is really tied to it, but it's not a direct link necessarily.
No, that's a great point there. I mean, I actually wrote a blog post last year titled, you know, blockchain will save, solve, cure everything, because I would see all sorts of headlines that how blockchain was going to cure everything from cancer to world hunger to, you know, and everything under the sun, you know, and it was part of that hype cycle that, you know, that you talked about. And I think you're right. I mean, I think, the onus is still to kind of identify what is the business problem or the business opportunity you're going after. Number two is looking around at your current solutions that you have. Are you leveraging them to the full extent can they be a solution to the problem that you're looking to solve? Because I always make the example, you know, all of us probably use Excel, but we only use, 10% of its capabilities. Right. Same thing with a TMS that you may already have. You know, you may only be using a fraction of its capabilities. You may not even know that it's able to do X, Y, and Z because you never had a need for it in the past. And maybe now you should be asking that question. But I think you're right. I think for certain applications, once you go through this kind of process in terms of asking and analyzing different options, blockchain will emerge as, you know, a solution worth investigating. Personally, I see it in the global trade space where you've got all these trading partners, you've got a lot of documents, you got financial transactions that are taking place. I mean, I think there the business case is arguably stronger than, let's say, in using blockchain to send EDI, you know, transactions, right? Yeah. Where, is it too fancy of a tool relative to other approaches that are out there?
Yeah. It's still very early too. I mean, it's a new technology. It's in the kind of public space anyway. It hasn't been around a long time. And my estimate is we only know 30 to 40% of what even the possible solutions are. And I think part of the problem that happened is the hype cycle was so high that everyone jumped in and felt like they needed to be a part of it. And then to your point, they realized either we haven't really figured out how to use it yet, or we haven't figured out its best use yet. And their pilots kind of fizzled out. And they lost faith in blockchain. And you can see that a lot on the currency side, which to me, the currency side is interesting, but it's not even the biggest opportunity. I think in the enterprise space with supply chain, places like freight, there's much, much bigger opportunity. And it's too bad that the hype cycle scared some people away. I think everyone should be still paying attention to it and trying it, at least in a measured format. But it's something that's still new, still going to have to go through the cycle of figuring out if it works. And, you know, technology is still evolving in the space. And to that point, it doesn't really have its own technology. It's more of a concept of how you apply other technologies to make it useful. So, yeah, I think it's a great, exciting space. And I'm hoping to see some great, exciting results from it. But I think it's going to take a little time.
Right. Well, and then there's the parallel reality that you ultimately are going to need some kind of standards or agreements between different trading partners on how to use this relative to whatever business process you're talking about. So that's a whole other, and standards, getting people to agree on any kind of standard is always a tough and long process. Yeah. So do you see this digitization of freight as we've, defined it here and talked about it here? Do you see this as a kind of a disruptive force in the industry that is one that's going to kind of disintermediate, you know, freight brokers and others in the industry, as some are talking about? Or do you see it more as a kind of transformational force, you know, that one that will, you know, streamline and improve the way existing trading partners work together?
Yeah, I'll kind of attack that in a couple of sides, because I think depending on the technology you're talking about, the answer varies. So if you're talking about something like artificial intelligence and applying that to autonomous vehicles, that's obviously disruptive. You know, over time, that's going to change the way that we operate and disrupt business models that around that, whether that's brokerage or asset-based carriers and how they do business. I don't think either one of them are going away with that new model. And so it'd be disruptive to their business and how they operate. And the ones that kind of adopt it faster and are better at doing it faster, we're probably going to be the ones that succeed. But overall, I think you're going to still have asset carriers that take care of the trucks and maintain the trucks and maybe don't have to worry about the drivers in the long run, a very long run. And then you're going to have brokers that are still connecting the dots between carriers that are segmented across the United States or across the world for that matter. I think if you get into some other spaces, such as, you know, the digital brokerage space, you have to remember most of the companies out there today in the digital brokerage space are kind of split into two parties. One side is really applying new technology, right? They're using RPA, the robotic process automation, or they're doing, you know, natural language processing where they can read emails like a human would versus happen to have it in a certain structure. And so they're just, those are definitely evolving. And I would even argue the ones on the other side that are using some of those same technologies that you might be seeing making bigger splashes are doing so because they're attacking different parts of the market, right? They're attacking that mom and pop or that single driver and owner, or even a small fleet, say under 10 trucks. You know, that's disruptive to maybe a brokerage that's out there in traditional format today operating that space. But I don't think it's necessarily disruptive to the big guys who are, you know, operating, you know, dealing with average fleets of 30, 40, 50 or more. Because again, that new technology is helping because they're dealing with smaller fleet sizes. It's not necessarily disrupting the entire stage per se. So yeah, you'll see some, you know, gain share go back and forth. You'll see some of those new digital brokerage, you know, get bigger because they are attacking a different space. And you know, at some point, the larger brokerage houses might delve down into that space and say, okay, well, we're feeling left out. Even if I'm not losing real market share, I'm losing image and I'm losing brand. But it's really hard for those large brokerages to make that change. You know, I had a CEO one time at a software company tell me, he said, the best thing for me to do is to kind of improve and to take the next leap to the next type of software is to start another software company with the goal of killing my old software company. Because if you think about it, if I'm a customer of someone today, I don't want to, you know, all the change. I don't want the new stuff. I want the new stuff, but I don't want the big headache to transfer it. You got all these new customers that want the new exciting thing. And so you're always fighting against that. And the big brokerages have that trouble too, right? They have the customers that are very happy with what they do today. And they have the customers like, yeah, but these other digital guys over here are doing something really cool. And I want to be a part of that. So I think you're going to see more and more of these companies try to do that, you know, spin off or, you know, start another company. Because you also have to remember from a resource perspective, it's different kind of people. I mean, just taking a bunch of brokerage people and telling them they're now a digital company doesn't make them a digital company. Because, you know, you need the young, the technology focused, but with enough brokerage knowledge to make it successful to kind of make that model work.
Yeah, and a lot of great points there to unpack. And I think you're right. I mean, I think as a whole, in general, I think what has happened is that, particularly with some of these startups that have come to market that have been more technology centric, if you will, is that they've elevated the role of technology and the importance of technology in the space, right? So they force even the big guys, the guys that are, you know, the entrenched players to kind of say, hey, you know, we need to become more technological, you know, more savvy on the technology front, to even if it's from a image perspective or, not so much from a kind of losing market share perspective. And I think the other thing that I hear is that, you know, people like to compare some of these folks to like the Uber and what Uber did in the taxi industry. But the reality is, you know, Uber created a whole new set of capacity, right? You and I as potential drivers, you know, none of these players are creating added capacity, right? You're still playing with the same capacity, you know, that's out there. So I think something like you said before, you know, driverless trucks, artificial intelligence, you know, that's changing the game because you could add a lot more capacity there because you don't need drivers. So that could be that could be disruptive and transformational. This, you know, kind of remains to be seen a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, the easiest way to add capacity is not even digital, right? Being a better shipper, right? A shipper of choice is a great way to add capacity. It has nothing to do with being digital whatsoever. I mean, maybe we deep down in some of the solutions to support it, but most of the solutions are very manual process to just improve in communication, right? So,
right.
Or even better, I think you got to take that into account.
Right. Even just better leveraging or utilizing the capacity that exists today, right? We've all heard for decades, you know, how much empty miles there are in the industry. And, you know, how do you leverage some of this technology to kind of leverage the existing capacity more, utilize it more effectively today? So ultimately, I mean, what's the value proposition, you know, for the industry? I mean, what are the main challenges to, you know, to achieving some of these, you know, expected benefits?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of sides to the value. I mean, obviously, a lot of people look straight to the human value, right? As far as the number of resources required to operate something, obviously, you get into the autonomous trucks and you start questioning, maybe not day one that they don't have humans inside them, but, you know, at some point they do. There's that play, and that is a value, and it's there. You know, in one of my previous lives, we did some RPA, the robotic process automation, and that can definitely speed things up. That can remove human labor and give you a, you know, labor cost and your SG&A savings. But that's really not where the big value is. I think the big value is for, you know, insights that you can't get today with humans and with other kind of digital technologies because of the time it takes. So things like machine learning that get in there and really crank through the data you already probably have in your system and start to identify those insights that you just didn't catch yourself, because it would take you or your resources, your teams, years to find that. And, you know, these things can do this in minutes and hours. So I think finding the value that's actually in your supply chain, in your freight, using these technologies, where the big value is. You know, I think that's tied to the labor is a great sale, but I think that's really more on the insights to what the answers are that you're looking for. You know, whether that's, you know, running your spot freight differently. Maybe it's you look at your data and you say, oh, wow, I've been spotting my freight out at 4 p.m. I wonder why I'm paying high prices. Well, there's probably a good reason for that. Now, that's an obvious one. You do it at 10 a.m. But, you know, if you go through that, you can find out that there's certain days of the week, certain minutes of the day, certain days and times of the weekend, whatever it might be, where, you know, the market has plays differently. And some of us over time get those feelings and those gut feelings, but there's a lot more we can get through this insight that these machine learning and other, you know, digital technologies can provide for us.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I mean, what do you see as the biggest challenge? I mean, is it the classic, you know, just change management, as you kind of alluded to before? You know, it's like, hey, moving away from the way we've always done things, like, hey, you know, this isn't exactly broken. So, hey, you know, why fix it? Right. Or, you know, I think that, I mean, I see that as one of the hurdles. Is that, do you see that as the main challenge, is just getting people to buy into that perhaps the old way of doing things is not going to be what's going to define success moving forward?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's three ways of looking at it. I agree with you 100%. And I think that happens with a lot of things. Change management is probably our number one roadblock to any supply chain project I've ever seen. You know, even if you get the people at the top convinced, having them put the information down and do it in a convincing way versus just a pushing it down perspective is difficult. And even if you boil it up from the bottom, you know, if it comes up to the top and the guy or girl at the top doesn't necessarily agree with it, then it falls apart too. So change management is very important. But I think, you know, two other things are also important for those that have kind of bought into the idea, or at least are interested in the idea. One is patience. So we saw that in blockchain. I think there was the lack of patience in blockchain with some people, and they dove in too early. And I don't think it was necessarily that it was too early. It was just too much too early and expecting too much immediately. I think it's one of those, you need to take it on a drip approach right now. Try it, you know, experience it, understand it. But also think also in a lot of these spaces, it's expertise. These are new things. There's not a lot of experts out there. I mean, even in blockchain, there's only a limited number of people that really know what it does. A limited number of people that really know how to make it do what it's supposed to do. And getting a hold of those people nowadays is difficult. Now, the hype cycle is over. That should be a little bit easier. But the same goes with any area. You know, you're an engineer. There's only so many engineers out there in the world. So machine learning, autonomous trucks, people that are in the engineering space that understand that is limited. So I think this is the time when people like yourselves, educating others on the space is great. I think, you know, customers out there and shippers out there and even carriers out there need to be talking with advisors such as yourself and others, and piloting and trying that out, you know, giving it a try with others to see what they can do. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to go all in to make these things work. Don't get too excited about the value. I mean, I believe the value is there. I believe it's strong value, but again, take that slow, measured approach and have a little patience and, you know, use people like yourself to find the expertise, because even though you may understand the space, you may not be the one that, you know, makes the work happen. You probably know who makes the work happen. So I think making sure you've got your network going in these new technology spaces is also important.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, one of the other things I've seen is, you know, the classic analysis paralysis, right? Where, you know, it's like, okay, let's continue. Let's build a business case. Let's do the ROI analysis. Let's get more data. Let's get more information before we approve any project. And the project and the scope continues to grow and grow and grow. And it becomes harder and harder to approve versus, to your point, you know, taking these baby steps, experimenting, doing these, you know, shorter term projects or initiatives, low risk, low cost, but you get a lot of learning, you know, through that. And you're taking that iterative step, I think has proven to be, you know, the way that some of the leaders in this area have moved forward.
Yeah, I think the Scrum or Agile method is a perfect application here, right? Just quick things that develop quickly that you can test, pilot, prove it works or not. If it doesn't work, great, okay, scratch it off, like you said, a little bit of investment, you know, write it off, pass it on, go on. But if there's promise, then you can build it into something bigger versus, you know, a TMS or a dummy mess, much more proven technologies. Lots of people can tell you they work or they don't work. To your point, you may not even be using all of what you have. So there's a lot of options out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Brian, we're kind of running short on time here. So I'm just going to go right to my last question. I mean, as a way to wrap up then, I mean, when it comes to the digitization of freight, I mean, what actions should companies take then to, you know, make sure that they're prepared for it?
Yeah, I boil it down to two simple things. And I think we've talked a little bit about here. One is learn, right? Educate yourself on what it is. You'd be amazed on how many executives I've talked to that had no idea what these technologies were. They might not even know what the acronym stands for. They just felt like they needed to be a part of it. And again, back to like we said, educate yourself. Find out, is this a technology that helps you digitize your freight? Does it make sense for you to digitize this part of your freight and supply chain? And then, you know, try something. Experiment. Small experiments. You know, do it with partners. There's tons of startups out there in this space. They have some great ideas. They're just looking for partners to work with. They're not looking for a lot of money. They're just looking for someone to kind of keep them going and help them develop their technology. So get a part, you know, be a part of an incubator, be a part of one of these conferences that goes and looks at a lot of different startups and partner with somebody and give them what they need, which is a nice big name from a shipper or a carrier to work with and to learn. And at the same time, you get to, you know, get access and learn about the new technologies and try them out.
You know, great advice. And I wholeheartedly agree with both of those things. And, you know, Brian, like I always say, you know, we always manage to scratch the surface on these topics. And certainly the digitization of freight is something that we could probably have a whole conference on and spend, you know, a day talking about. But I think we covered a lot of ground today and you provided some great insights and advice. So thank you for making the time to be with us today.
No, thanks, Adrian. It's been great. I appreciate you taking the time and allowing me to come on and speak with you about digitization of freight. And I wish everyone good luck in the space. And if they ever have any questions, they know where to go. Adrian's right here to answer all your questions.
Well, I'll at least try to answer as many as I can. And I'm not afraid to say, I don't know, because that, as your point, you know, there's a lot of things that are still evolving here. And the simple answer is we don't know yet. So, well, thank you for joining us today. I look forward to, you know, seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. And if you've got any questions for Brian, you can, and you're watching this episode on demand, either at the Geodis website or on Talking Logistics, you can post it there. And I'm sure Brian would be more than happy to respond via that medium. So again, thank you and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.